All right, hi. So I'm Brian Cardell. I'm a developer advocate at Agalia.
And I'm Eric Meyer, also a developer advocate at Agalia. And it's 2026.
It is 2026. We made it.
Yeah.
I guess there's a question if we'll make it to 2027 now. Mm-hmm. We started the year and we did a lot of like looking back at the year 2025. And I don't know, somewhere along the way, I just thought, what if we look forward? Are there actually things to be interested in and excited about? Like, what are they? So we thought that sounds like maybe an interesting show to talk about some of that stuff. So
let's do that stuff.
It would be nice to have some let's look forward in a positive way sort of content.
I cannot disagree.
So Eric, what's you got anything that you're looking forward to?
Oh, I have things. Anchor positioning is a big one for me in CSS. Yeah. It's landing in all the browsers, I believe. As we record this, I think last week it landed in Firefox Stable. Anchor positioning, you can do lots of really cool stuff. I've been a huge fan of side notes for years and years and years rather than footnotes or endnotes. Those have their places, don't get me wrong, but I just really like side notes for a lot of things where you can just off to one side of the main content say, here's what this is referring to. So like I'm already doing that a little bit on my personal blog, fireweb.com. I have side notes set up and they should be working in all the browsers now. I mean, I of course over-engineered mine with a custom element and some JavaScript, but not much. And at some point I'll probably also have just plain like side notes. But anyway, you can do way more than side notes. You can do tooltips and pop-ups and other, you know, besides the pop-up element or whatever we're calling it. You can connect things together visually with a little bit of decoration using anchor positioning. I actually did that. I had an article about that or a post about that. It's been a while now, but I did it for, I think, wpewebkit.org. Just to have a line go from the nav bar link representing the section of the site you're in.
Right.
And with a little dotted line go down and then go over and connect to other parts of the design in order to just visually convey, hey, this is where you are. Stuff like that could be made a whole lot easier with anchor positioning, or is made a whole lot easier with anchor positioning. Just, yeah, I'm really kind of excited. I think we're quickly going to run into people saying, oh, I wanted to do this thing and anchor positioning doesn't quite get there. But that's, you know, same thing happened with Flexbox and Grid and every other advancement in CSS really is that, you know, people immediately push out to the limits of what the new technology can do. And that informs the next revision of what the technology can do, right? Like anchor positioning level 2 will almost certainly incorporate the working group seeing what people do with it and people writing blog posts saying, oh, anchor positioning is so cool, but I tried to do this one thing and it didn't work. And I really think it should have because it just seems so obvious. And, you know, sometimes the working group looks at those and says, yeah, that does seem obvious. Let's figure out how we can do that. So yeah, if you're people listening, try out anchor positioning, give a shot at using it in a progressively enhancing way. And if you have ideas that don't work out, you know, certainly like write about it, post about it, blog about it, social media about it, saying I tried to do thing did not work. And you might hear back from people saying, oh, well, here's how you do thing, right? Or you might hear, oh, yeah, you can't do that because whatever reason. And then maybe that leads to, in the next version of anchor positioning, being able to do that. So how about you?
Yeah, that's a good example of, I'm trying to think how to like sort of arrange these because like I have a list here of some of my own things too. And it's a good example of like stuff that is like basically across the finish line. And it's just like hey, it'll be really exciting to be able to use it, you know, after it's been there, like developing for a really long time. So anchor positioning, I think the first time that I discussed that in a standards context was in, I want to say 2019, 2020, something like that, in OpenUI. Like there already had been like a lot of kind of thought into that. And then it got eventually taken up by the CSS working group. And then it made a bunch of progress. And then, as often happens, like opinions happened, you know, as it was going through, and sort of like who's got time to edit. And, you know, it changed a bunch. I think it's still great. I'm looking forward to just being able to use it. I guess another one like that is the details element. You have now, like, you know, like hidden until found and all the stuff that the improvements that have been made on a details element. I think that was all done as part of Interop this year, if I'm not wrong.
I think so.
And yeah, yeah, I just look forward to not having to worry about any of that stuff. You know, like that's, you know, it's one of those things where you're grateful to be at that point finally, you know, whereas there's a whole bunch of other things that are, I'm excited about, that are like, they're probably still like maybe really far off in some cases, you know. Some of them aren't even standards related. They're just, I'm looking forward. I want to get that Steam Cube that we talked about a couple of weeks that Agalia worked on, you know,
the Steam Cube, the Steam Frame, the, your, yeah. Which one?
I think I want the Gabe Cube. Is that
the Gabe Cube? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I want that because, I don't have like a gaming PC. I have a PS4 and, I mean, I bought it, you know, 10 years ago or whatever. And I still play it all the time, but there's a bunch of games that my kids play that I can't play with them because they're
Windows. And yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoy playing video games from time to time, and having a GameCube would be kind of fun because I'm a Mac guy. So like 90% of the Steam library isn't accessible to me. And with a GameCube, it would become as accessible to me. The downside, of course, is that it might suck up a whole lot of my time. But I could be, you know, I plan for retirement. Have a little GameCube ready for me.
Yeah. I guess Temporal is sort of almost in that same kind of vein, right? Like it's
getting real close.
It's getting real close, yeah.
It's been in Firefox, at least the nightly builds, for a while now. And I'm believe that it's public now. Chrome is in a the Chrome implementation came along later, but is coming along. And Agalia has actually started landing fixes in JavaScript Core, which is the JavaScript engine for WebKit. Mm-hmm. So hopefully it will come soon to, you know, like Safari Technology Preview at least. And I guess it is available, I think, in Safari Technology Preview, but you have to use a runtime flag to enable it at the current state that it's in. We were just talking with Tim Chevalier, who works for Agalia and has done most of that implementation. And I guess they're just, you know, it's a very large implementation. So yeah. It's in a lot of sort of modular patches. Mm-hmm. And many of them have landed, but there are still more to land. And so, and landing, you know, requires the whole feedback process of anyone who accepts external patches. In this case, it's Apple, but we go through the same thing with Google or Mozilla. You know, mm-hmm. if we have patches, then they got to review it internally. They got to run it against their tests. Mm-hmm. If they have any feedback, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not there yet, but it's getting real close. So yeah, fingers crossed that by the end of this year, that will be in, you know, in all of the stable releases, full implementations. And we're, you know, we're just down to the place of, oh, there's this weird bug in whatever browser's implementation and it just needs to get fixed.
There's all kind of fun things on there. We did a show. I don't know. Were you here yet when we did that show on Temporal? Like we thought it was coming actually a while ago.
A while ago, yeah. I don't remember if that was me or not.
Yeah. So we had several guests on that. But it was a good show. They talk, but there's a lot of talk about, you know, those kind of complicated examples that you don't even think about. So it's, you know, not, it's not just years and days. It's not like you just say, well, there's this many days in a year. You also have to deal with like leap years, and you have to do with like calendar anomalies, and you need to deal with like, oh, but this is the way that daylight savings time works in this place versus this place. And
yeah,
it gets really, really complicated.
Yeah. Temporal just makes all that magically go away.
Yeah, we hope.
Wow.
So yeah, those are some things that we're excited about. I'm also excited about appearance base. Do you know about appearance base?
Tell me more.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that is nice and also frustrating about HTML is that, you know, you can lean on controls. So you can just say, give me a select, for example.
Oh, so like form inputs and stuff.
Yeah, for form inputs. So you can have these interactive elements that a complex widget of some kind, and you don't need to worry about a lot. You just declaratively say, I want this. And then it's up to the operating system how that gets displayed. And it could be different, right? And so that's like been a selling point for HTML for a long time. That allowed, for example, when you have a select on your mobile device gives you a picker that's more appropriate than would, right, than just a, you know, what you would get size wise on your desktop, you know. It's cool, but sometimes it means we've given like almost no ability to style it,
right?
And even to the extent where we want to talk about like parts that we want to style, and we're like, parts, what parts? I don't know.
Well, because those form controls like selects or radio buttons or whatever in CSS terms are replaced elements. They're like images. You're not supposed to be able to see into that box. It's like, here's a box and a thing gets put there, and that's, we can do things around it. Like, but right, that's it. And, obviously, that's come up against designers wanting to make the radio buttons have the color that matches the color theme of the site, or, you know, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. You know, because the composition of them varies, like there are sort of like browser specific pseudo classes in some cases where it's like, oh, well, we exposed the thumb for this control,
or what the separator, if there's a separator, could look like between select entries, like select options.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, I was just thinking, as we were saying this, in a lot of ways, form elements are a lot like web components. You know, there's like a shadow DOM and you can't look inside, except there have been these little ways to pierce that.
Yeah. I mean, in fact, that is part of how the design of shadow DOM and custom elements comes about, is there's parallels for everything in the platform in the design of custom elements, more or less. So appearance base is like the first time when we lay out pretty specifically, like sort of, here's the white label version of this control, and here are the relevant parts that you can style. And they're the same for all the operating systems. And I think that there are some sort of like cutouts for, if you wanted to do like the mobile thing, maybe that still is mobile, but yeah, like if you have the control, you can style it, and it's not going to be different on Mac than it is on Windows or whatever. You're not going to be like, this part exists in this and not in another one. What's exciting to me is that like, this has always been sort of like completely off the table as a answer. And it's another one of those things that's taken a really long time. First conversations I had around this were also in 2019 with Greg Whitworth at OpenUI. And he was like, if we can do this, then we can do a lot of things. We can make a lot more things stylable. We can make a lot more things more predictable. And yeah, anyway, it's good to see some attempt here, because I think we haven't had a real attempt at answering some of these questions before. And I'm really pleased to see the people who are working on it and the progress that it's making. It's not like there's nobody who's like, we just can't do this. So it'll be great to see what happens with all this. I'm excited, because it's a fundamentally new thing. It could be amazing, or maybe not.
Yeah. Well, I still feel that form elements should be operating system consistent, so that it doesn't matter what browser you're using, users immediately recognize a thing. But, you know.
But I think your position is even more strict than that. Like, you would almost like them to be less stylable, right? Like,
yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. What else? Do you have anything else on your list that?
I mean, those are kind of the big ones that we've covered so far for me. There are other things I'm sure that I'd be like, oh, cool, right? And there's stuff that's been discussed, like, for example, in the CSS working group, that is cool, but it's not shipping right now. Mm-hmm. So this stuff around line heights and box trimming, I think that those are nice. Again, not exactly going to set the world on fire. The web would not be hugely restricted if those never landed. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, we've worked with them so far, but having them land, so to be able to say that for this element, like for this div, margins should not stick out of the top and bottom of the div. They should be trimmed off. Sure. That's kind of cool. And line clamp and initial letter and things like that, things that are, that lead to more typographical richness and sort of more typographical consistency. So that rather than having things where things just look a little off because we're using programmatic rules rather than somebody who is literally laying out pages lead block by lead block and able to say, okay, we're going to shave this space out because it just looks better. Or we're going to add a little more space here because that helps it conform to the line rhythm. That sort of thing. Those are being landed in some cases, discussed in other cases, moved forward. Just that whole bucket of more typographical subtlety and richness, I think, is pretty cool. I like that sort of thing. Text fitting is another one that's in there. The idea of being able to say, well, I want the font size of this text to be whatever will make it exactly fill out the inline space that it has, like for headlines. That's been a thing that people have written JavaScript to do, and that Roma Komarov has written completely mad CSS to try to get real close to. And I honestly think that both of those things together, the working group is now going to just be able to sort of say, all right, here's how it would be done. What's the property value combination or combinations that we want to make it happen natively? So those are at least some of mine.
You know what I am excited about is web speech, which might sound funny because it's another one that dates back like really, really far when it got started. But it took a long time before it got implemented everywhere, and it's always been wonky and bad. And I've been trying since, I think, 2017 to get the ball rolling on that again, because like there's just a lot of things you should be able to do with it that people are doing with similar technologies, but you would like them to be able to use web speech. Now it is getting some attention and movement, and they just recently added a way to do like when you're listening for transcription, how to add sort of like contextual biasing, so that if you have words that maybe sound alike, you can bias them toward hearing the right word. So okay. It's also useful when you get to like names and like proper nouns and, you know, things that it's like unlikely to hear unless you give it some hints about like, these are the things that I want you to hear. So if you had, for example, a tech podcast, maybe you want to like load that with like a bunch of terminology, right? And say, these are words you're likely to hear and make sure that they're, you know, these are the ones that you're hearing, not something that might sound like it. Now there's a bunch of energy to maybe completely fully redesign part of the APIs around how to speak and make it promise based. And yeah, I think that's just really exciting.
Yeah. And I mean, for those who like to have speech happen, like this is for the turning text into speech, right?
It's that is, but for both, there's a lot of energy to next take up the how to speak as opposed to how to transcribe. Maybe a full redesign of that.
So wait, how to speak versus how to transcribe.
Right. How to hear versus how to speak.
Okay. I see. It's interesting too. I saw one of the other things on your list was spell checking and like where those overlap or don't overlap.
Those three things. And then there's also a bunch of proposals around like machine learning that also have to do with sort of like, all of these have to do with something similar in that it's like, let's say you have a site that is dedicated toward Pokemon, right? That's the example used in a bunch of explainers and things, because Pokemon has all kinds of like made up words that sound like other words. And if you have them typed in, you say, spell check this, your dictionary is not going to contain Charizard. You know what I mean?
Right.
But maybe it will auto suggest a few things that you might mean. It'll mark them with squigglies as those are wrong. You know, maybe if you read the page out loud, if it had it read the page out loud, it would, I don't know what it would do, you know? And if you tried to speak as speech input, you know, like have Charizard attack, blah, blah, blah. Right. It's unlikely to hear that, you know? So in all of these cases, you need to provide some kind of context, you know, that is domain specific. Right. And I'm working with our colleagues Zirin and Steven on Spellcheck Dictionary. That's the point is very similar. You have your operating system might provide a dictionary, your browser might provide a dictionary. When you click to add things, you can add them to your dictionary. Some browsers let you go and like add words manually to a dictionary, like through some interface. Mm-hmm. But what happens when you go to a site and the site is about Pokemon? You don't have the Pokemon in your dictionaries. The site is like, no, don't worry, I'll provide you with the dictionaries, right? So there's a lot of question about like how to design those features. This is like really interesting and fun to think about all of them at once, but also it's frustrating because some of them are already shipping and, you know, there's like pressure to ship, and also questions about how important is it for them to share stuff, you know? Yeah. Anyway, it's exciting to be involved in and working on in terms of sort of both of those things. So I'm recently on the new web audio working group for the speech stuff, and also working on the spell check dictionary. So we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. What else you got?
I'm keen on maybe them restarting the web monetization work community group. And yeah, I don't know how to put this in the right way. Yeah, this is a spec that is known by web monetization, and it is basically the thing that used to be with Coil, right? And I think there are a lot of open questions, and there are a lot of open challenges. I don't know how much that needs to be reshaped or what needs to take place, but I know that, you know, we don't get there without it getting some energy into it and people interested in discussing. So I'm keen for there to be some interest and energy into discussing and trying and seeing where it goes.
Yeah. I mean, it's always been the thing that feels like it's sort of missing from the platform is the ability to monetize without going to advertising.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, nobody does. That's the problem. But it would be nice if we could finally figure it out. I mean, it took a quarter century to figure out has in CSS. So,
and it's a little bit harder than has maybe.
It might be a little bit. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it is, honestly. Like, I think there are a lot of similar, you know, we talked about that offer wall, I think, a while back. That's a similar idea in a way. And I believe that the web monetization people are looking at how they could even plug into that. Okay. So maybe there are a lot of things coalescing toward, you know, at least again, the energy and excitement and not just this is stuck. To me, this is, I guess maybe this is sort of like the point of the show for me is like, for me, a lot of things that are hopeful and interesting are like, these are just unstuck. And that's exciting to me because a lot of them get stuck, you know? So almost all of the things that we talked about started 6-7 years ago or more. You can add to this MathML. MathML getting more interoperable. We're doing a bunch of stuff with the Sovereign Tech Fund to fund math interoperability this year. And that's huge. Part of that, and that ends up resolving differences in link types between MathML and SVG and HTML. And that's all just because it's like somebody's giving some funding to solve those problems and they're not just stuck, you know?
So what are the link types?
So MathML and SVG both have this concept of links, you know, but they're just like, you can put an href on anything.
Right.
And that, you know, a lot of people think that sounds good on the surface. I mean, it definitely makes some sense, but there are a lot of things that depend on your ability to sanitize HTML and to then plug in all the things that we do with link. Do you have a target attribute? Like, is that work? Do you have like no index, no follow? You know what I mean? Like all those other things that go into linking. None of that was really specified. And SVGs is like different in a way, in weird ways than HTML links. And math links just sort of like never were specified well at all. So getting them all working and all the same and all as safe as one another and interoperable and also just shaped the same way is small but really important things. I heard Anna Van Kesteren in 2012 or 2014, I think, give a talk at the first Extensible Web Summit that we had.
Okay.
And he gave like a intro talk and he said, you know, HTML5 is like, way, it's exciting. Yay. But you know, like a lot of the stuff that made it survive and made it be good and made it successful were like the parser stuff. And that was like the first thing that had to be done is this parser stuff. And it was like painful and boring and seems like not the most important, but in the end it is really, really important. And so it's just awesome when we can get that stuff done because it has big outsized impacts.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I am also looking forward to maybe a WP-based Android browser, a web view anyway, and then like a mini browser that we can play with.
Hmm.
That I would love to see grow into something else. I mean, that's just me looking forward, hopefully, I guess, you know, like I don't know that it will ever happen, but I think it's very interesting.
Oh, there's one that I forgot about until just now. Heading levels.
Right.
Yeah. Yes,
heading levels.
So that's Keith Amos is driving that.
Mm-hmm.
From Firefox, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's been pushing this forward to get it so you can basically say, here's how much you should offset all of the heading levels in this subtree of the DOM, like very easily. And I dig it.
Yeah, we did a show about it. We had mm-hmm. him on, Keith Circle. Keith Amos is his handle everywhere.
Right.
If you're listening audibly, that's his handle everywhere. We can link up the show, but literally the oldest problem on the web.
Yeah, pretty much. Which the document outline algorithm was supposed to solve and then failed to, because the algorithm failed. Well, implementation of the document outline algorithm never happened. But yeah, I think it was you who asked people, like, what is the thing that you would fix?
Yeah.
Sorry. Well, yeah, you probably got it there. But then I also, not too long ago, put up a social media post where I was basically like, my hot take on web technology that gets me, you know, surrounded by a bunch of people with swords is this. Right. And, you know, what's yours? And I did get a bunch of replies. And one of them was, we shouldn't have heading levels. There should just be H elements, and you should figure out from
right.
Like the browser should just figure out from the structure what their level should be. I was like, yep, pour one out for the document outline algorithm.
Yeah.
That was kind of the deal. So yeah, this is not that. This is a halfway step, I guess, or it's a middle ground where you can just say, hey, in here, everything should be like add two to every heading level. So H1s become H3s and H2s become H4s or fives. H1s become H4s. Whatever. Yeah. I think I did math wrong. But yeah, which is really useful for a lot of things. If you know the content is going to be viewed in multiple contexts, and usually if it's going to get inserted into other contexts where heading levels already exist, then being able to just offset them is super keen. But yeah, people can go back and listen to the episode that we did for more details. But yeah, that looks like it's moving forward. So I would love to see that start landing this year. That would be great.
You know, one of the things about the web that's just phenomenally interesting, I think you were talking about, you know, you asked a question on social media about what's the hot take that gets you. I also did a thing on social media a while back that was like, what's something that you really thought that you wanted so much? And then we got it and you're like, I don't actually use that very much. You know, I wonder actually how this will play out in the long run, because it is literally the oldest problem, like, but because it's the oldest problem, it means that we have more or less solved it, you know, in other ways. And so now the question is, like, will people actually adjust and how much and like what are the reasons to do it? So like, will you change your blog? Do you think? Or
I will.
You will?
Yeah. And I do have this problem. Well, yes, I will change my blog in a few ways. I think this is going to be one of the many, 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 many features of the web platform. And by that, I mean things that are in HTML, things that are in CSS, things that are in JavaScript, where there are a whole lot of things that you don't use very often. But when you need them, you're really glad they're there. You know, the paragraph tag is not one of them. Like, you use the paragraph or the div tag, right? You use the mm-hmm. div element everywhere, basically. Mm-hmm. You use the CSS color property pretty much every time you write a full style sheet. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the CSS has stuff that I rarely use. And in fact, I use rarely enough that when I do use it, I have to go look up the syntax because mm-hmm. I can't remember. I'm like, okay, there's this property that does this thing. I think it's called blah, blah, blah. But I don't remember any of the values. Let me MDN look it up. You know, there's a lot of that. We're well past, I feel like, the point of doing things, adding things that will become absolutely core to everyday work. Whereas, mm-hmm. you know, anchor positioning is an excellent example. I think so many cool things can be done with it, but is it needed all the time? No, it's not. Mm-hmm. Never will be. I don't think it'll ever be needed all the time. It's just, you know, you miss it when it's not there. And once it's there, it'll be God, I'm really glad we have this. This is so cool. And I think things like the heading level offset is probably, is very much that, you know, not a lot, you know, a lot of websites will have no need for it. And a lot of websites that do have need for it will miss that it's available and so won't use it for a while. Mm-hmm. But there will be situations like on MireWeb, you know, the title of a blog post is supposed to be an H1 on a page that shows that individual blog post, mm-hmm. but it should be an H2 on archive pages. And then I have a little bit of code in WordPress that does that. I then have to like skip heading levels. If I want to put headings in my posts, I usually end up skipping a heading level in some contexts. Right. And this is why I almost never put heading levels in my blog posts, because it's such a pain. And I know that in one context or the other, they'll be wrong. Like, there will be an accessibility problem. Mm-hmm. So I very rarely use them. And with this, I would feel more free to use them. I mean, not this year, probably. I would want to wait a year or two for that sort of thing to become widely available. But
yeah, I think it's going to be huge. I don't think this is a thing that we're going to go, no, we didn't. In the end, we don't really want that. I think we definitely want it. I think it's going to be huge. But I think it's also one of these things that is going to take a long time to permeate. And why I think it's interesting is because a lot of the success of these, we won't be able to measure for 5 to 10 years, right? So, like, I'm not rewriting my blog because I can write headings a different way, you know, probably. But when I do rewrite my blog, I will probably use that. You know, if I write some new site, I will probably use that. I'll definitely use it, you know?
Yeah.
When it's available, but right now you need a polyfill and the polyfill can't do some of the things that you want it to do. So like, probably I'll just wait, you know, I'll just wait. And, once it's available, then I write some new content, I will probably use it.
That makes sense.
I think there are a lot of stuff like this. I mean, Grid is also growing slowly, not because Grid isn't awesome. It's so awesome. Like, anything that's new that's being written has to use Grid. I can't imagine how you don't use Grid, right? Mm-hmm. But like, you know, we actually work on websites that aren't using Grid. And, you know, well, there's nothing wrong with a website, you know, so right. We're not going to invest money into rewriting it to use Grid just to make it use Grid.
Yeah. You wait until the redesign.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, I think that's fair.
And the thing is, you know, the web is very stable. So, you know, it ages slowly. So when we look at all these statistics about, you know, websites and how much things are used and all that, like, yeah, there's still bias and all that data toward jQuery and, you know, because it's just still there, you know, still works fine, which is actually the strength of the web.
Yep, absolutely.
Is that my whole list? Oh, no. When I first came here, I had a lot of questions about embedded systems. I didn't know a lot about them, you know, and I was like, well, so they're kind of like web views. And it's like, well, some people said yes, some people said no. And then there was also this effort to make these mini apps, which I was like, so they're kind of like web views. People were like, well, And then there's also all this work on sort of like the Fugu stuff that's like, well, it's sort of like the stuff that you do with like Electron and stuff like that. And it's like, well, so this year at TPAC, there was like a joint meeting that was like a bunch of those sort of interests together. And there was like this, hey, you know, this mini apps thing doesn't really seem to be getting where we wanted to get it. And web views isn't kind of getting enough of what we want. And these other proposals aren't really going somewhere. And like, there just seemed to be like some interest and willingness into like getting all those interests together and finding the common ground and trying to find what we could do. And I think that's really huge because like basically everything is written with web technology. But like lots of it is just, you know, not standard to the same extent that the HTTP web in the web browser is standardized, you know?
Yeah.
But it would be great if more of it could be. So I'm really looking forward to the possibilities that could open up because I would love to learn a extended thing or find a way like the Fugu stuff to give powerful features in a safe way or whatever so that we make it possible to develop lots of that stuff closer to the platform, you know, not rely on frameworks and things like that.
Yeah. Okay. I feel like that's a good look ahead.
That is a good look ahead.
So those of you out there in listener land, let us know on social media or wherever else you want to send feedback, what you're looking forward to and the web platform in 2026.
Yeah, probably all kinds of stuff that we didn't even talk about.
Yeah.
I would imagine. So look forward to hearing what those are.
Yeah.
And we, you know, we didn't cover only one thing from JavaScript, you know?
Right. And there's probably way more that we should have been looking at. But
yeah. Lots of DOM stuff that I know of that we didn't cover either that is like, you know, have to do with like Canvas or like web audio or, you know, all kinds of cool stuff. So yeah, there should be rich for the comments. So yeah. share your excitement with us and maybe we'll come back and talk about some of those.
Yeah. I was just thinking, let us know and we could do a follow-up and, you know, sort of cover mailbag as it were.
Yeah. So,
cool. All right.
Well, thanks.
Yeah. Thanks, Brian.